going on? It's the Film Drunk Frogcast, coming to you live from the Frog Quarters in San Francisco. I think I'm getting better at this intro thing. What do you guys think?
Marginally.
We got the human giant, Brendan, sitting to my left.
Oh, you were talking to me?
Yeah. Well,
I thought you were talking to someone else in this room.
I was talking about you. No, it's just us in this room today.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Just two guys, and we're having a good time. And we got Matt Lieb on the Skype tubes.
Yup.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, I am terrible, man. I fucking hate this city.
That bad?
Yeah, I'm in Los Angeles. It was just because this is where my family is, and all they do is talk about everyone who's died, who I know from childhood.
Oh, that's always fun.
And then there's just a big, like, there's a bunch of pictures of my dead dog, too. Just everywhere, so I'm reminded of my dead dog a lot. But yeah, it's nice to hear your guys' voices.
You too. You know, yeah. Speaking of dead dogs, I still haven't figured out how to take people out of my, like, you know how you can star people on Facebook?
Oh yeah.
So there's a
to
few,
follow them.
You have like your 10 favorite friends or whatever.
Your top 8.
Yeah, I think you're in my top 8, Matt Lieb.
For real?
Yeah.
Does it sound good over Skype?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, it sounds pretty good.
It sounds great. But I can't figure out how to take my ex-girlfriend off of my starred contacts. And so like everything she does like pops up immediately. And like the last thing was, it was like changed her cover photo. And it's like our dog as her ring bearer at the wedding, like with a bow tie on. And I'm like, God damn it.
Jesus.
There's lots of pictures of them praying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, isn't that what a wedding is? Like, you're just praying the whole time about shit. So, like, why don't you, like, pray beforehand? It's like, getting ready for the wedding. Better get a prayer in.
Was there actual pictures of praying?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Lots of circles of hand-holding.
Oh, well, you know, you got to have fellowship. That's the number one thing that you do at a wedding.
I wish Brett was here to tell us that God is dead.
I really do. You really need him there to just inject a little bit of nihilism into your life.
Yeah.
He could just be like a phone app anytime you're stressing out. It's like, this doesn't even fucking matter.
Yeah. You need one friend like that, you know?
Just to put everything in cosmic perspective.
Yeah. You get too many of those, like, shit gets dark and you start wearing, like, netted forearm gloves and listening to Bauhaus. Mm-hmm. But you get one, and it just kind of has the right amount of perspective.
Yeah. Just to set up the fraught, what did we used to call this?
Space Docket.
Space Docket, that's right. I have Ty West we're going to talk to for a little bit. He's got The Sacrament coming out, and we're going to talk to him for a little bit. We're going to have to talk to him separately from Matt Lieb, since Matt Lieb's not here, and I can't do them both at the same time.
So I'm just going to talk shit about their conversation. Yeah. I'm not going to be able to hear any of it. Yeah. But
I made him watch the movie, but he doesn't get to participate in the conversation, unfortunately.
You know, it was an enjoyable experience either way, because it was great.
Hey, Vince.
Hey.
I watched the movie.
Fuck yeah. Oh, I needed to have my applause sound effect handy.
Yeah.
We'll wait.
You know.
Let's just wait.
Okay.
Let's just be silent.
Just be silent for a while?
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, there he goes.
Can you guys hear that over the...
Yeah.
All right, good. It's really hard to Skype this fucking show.
Is that an app that you have?
Yes, I have an app called DJ Sounds, and it has an air horn in it.
I bet you there's a guy named DJ Sounds.
Yeah,
oh,
definitely.
For sure. And he's pissed.
And
he doesn't have an app.
His real name's like Abe Goldberg.
He's not getting royalties off this free app.
Exactly. Well, there's ads in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's how people make their money.
What's the ad? What are the ads for? That's what I want
to
know.
Beep, beep. Brought to you by Rockaware.
It's actually Clash of Clans. That's one.
Okay. They advertise probably, everywhere.
Yeah, dude. People play stupid shit. I don't understand people. All you need is this shit, though.
Beats.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah.
I like all the reverb on that. So Beats, the sale went through.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. $3 billion. Did Dre make more on that than 50 Cent made on Vitamin Water?
I think Vitamin Water for 50 Cent was $400 million.
Yeah. He made like 50 of it, though, based on how much stock he had.
Oh, right. Was the whole deal $400 million? Maybe that was it.
And I think that's what it was.
Yeah, that's probably right.
So Dre owns Beats, right?
He didn't own it. It was started by like a father and son or something. There was a very long article that I read about it a while back. And then they kind of got cut out of the deal because they gave up so much equity.
Yeah, apparently the son did the contract and had like no legal experience, and it gave them an out to basically
fuck over the founders.
No, 50 Cent actually made 400 million.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, Vitamin Water got bought for $4.1 billion. So Vitamin Water actually sold for more than Beats.
Yeah.
Jesus. Vitamin Water sold more than Beats headphones?
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I mean, they're both equally worthless.
Nah, Beats is tight. You don't know because you got fucking lame-ass Sony headphones on or some fucking... You got some bullshit headphones, but Beats, you can hear all the music.
You can tell everybody. You can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody.
I'm the man. I'm the man. I'm the man. Yeah, those are good songs, too. And you can hear them better on Beats.
I've heard that there's $14 worth of components in it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, the markup is, like, unbelievable.
Also, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to walk around with my headphones as a fashion accessory. Like I keep my dumb little, my in-ear earbuds and send them into the warranty whenever they run out, whenever they stop working.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I lose headphones a lot. Yeah. So
I have like 12 in my bedroom, various states of working and not working.
Yeah. My cat likes to eat headphones. I don't have a cat in San Francisco, but the cat at my parents' house. So I've had to hide all of my electronics. I'm in my room right now, my childhood room.
Do you have cool posters up, like Bone Thugs? And?
I have some Kobe Bryant posters. I have a couple framed photos of my mom, which I did not put in here. That's something my mom added. No, other than that, the walls are pretty bare. I didn't like to put things on the wall.
We were over at our buddy's new house. He just bought a house up in Marin, and we were over there for a barbecue for Memorial Day. And on his bookshelf downstairs, he has like a framed picture of himself, like a glamour shot by Deb. And
it's pretty amazing.
And I took a picture of it and I sent it to Brett. And then I was like just laughing so hard, and I put it up on Instagram. And then Brett texts me back. He's like, "Hey man, that's not cool. This was like real time laughs."
He didn't like that you had like broadcast the private joke to the world.
Yeah, he's like, take it down. Prove your loyalty to flesh over cyberspace.
Oh, I missed that dude.
And I was like, all right, man, if it means that much to you.
Does he still have a baby?
Nah, he lost it.
Oh, good.
Yeah, no, someone else has it. Yeah, I think he still has a baby.
I've been taking care of my brother's baby this entire time, and I now officially hate children.
Like a little ass baby?
He's 20 months old, so he's like the age where he can like, you know, fucking, he can't talk, but he can make noise. So he just screams, and he takes a shit everywhere. He just shits and screams, and he's just a little bastard. I'm done with kids. I don't want to touch him.
I don't like him at all. I've never liked him.
I thought I would like this one because it's my flesh and blood. But
sorta.
Yeah, you're right.
It didn't come out of your womb.
Or my fucking dick. It's not my fucking ding-dong juice inside of her coochie that made the baby. So that's a good point.
Yeah. You know, with a mouth like that, you could be making Seth MacFarlane movies.
With a mouth like my mouth?
Ding-dong juice and coochies.
Yeah.
That was actually, I saw A Million Ways to Die in the West last night. That was actually the good part.
It's like all the dirty words.
Yeah. Like I enjoyed the dirty word stuff where Sarah Silverman's like, yeah, shoot your dirty cowboy cum all over my face. And I was like, you know, I appreciate a phrase like dirty cowboy cum.
Was there anything else good in the movie? Because I'm going to see it probably in the theaters because I'm here and I have nothing to do.
I would describe it. Hey, turn off your echo.
This generation rules the nation. So it sounded like.
I would describe
it. Pass the dirty party left unsaid.
Yeah. I think it has the same format as everything Seth MacFarlane does, where it's like three good jokes that I think are legitimately good, and then the fourth one is like one that makes me groan so hard I want to pass out, and it almost ruins the other three. And then, you know, there's just like a mental checklist in your head of what kind of jokes you're going to see in it. Like, what would your checklist be, Brendan? I'll tell you if it's in there.
Oh,
Seth MacFarlane standard bits that you're going to see in a Seth MacFarlane movie.
I mean, skewering the GOP.
There's definitely the needle of the Christians.
Global warming joke?
I don't think there was a global warming joke. It's set in the Old West, so. Mm.
Yeah, I kind of would have figured it out. Figured that he would just like find a way to do that. Mm-hmm. Let's see.
A low blow to like a down and out, washed up celebrity.
I don't know. There was a Mr. Belding cameo. I don't know if that counts.
How about a thin premise for a song and dance routine?
Oh, yeah. That.
Yeah, that's duh.
You know that's going to be in there.
Yeah.
Like full cutaways? Full song and dance.
Cutaways?
Cutaways. Definitely there's cutaways. I mean, they get cutaways in the trailer. I will say the cutaways in the trailer are worse than in the actual movie, because there's that one cutaway in the trailer where they drop the ice on the guy, and that was pretty painful, in my opinion.
What else?
You know, there you got the completely out of left field reference to something that's apropos of absolutely nothing to the plot.
Right. Well, but does, I guess, like, where I think I'm struggling with this game here is, are they cognizant of modern pop culture or like weird late 70s, early 80s pop culture? Maybe?
It's more like the filmmakers winking at you rather than the characters are doing something. All right, I'm just going to spoil a scene.
Okay.
And it's the worst scene. Seth MacFarlane's just walking through the town. This has nothing to do with the plot of the movie. And he sees like lights going on inside this barn. And he goes in there and he finds Doc Brown and the DeLorean.
Mm, okay. I saw a clip of Doc Brown.
And then that's the whole
like,
joke.
Somewhere, and I was like, oh, okay.
Is it actually Christopher Lloyd?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like covering up. He's like covering up the DeLorean.
He's covering
or something.
Up the DeLorean, yeah.
Weird.
Oh, what a great joke.
Yeah, and that's the kind
it's
of joke.
It's not even a joke.
That's the kind of joke where I'm like, oh, God, this is the worst. And while I'm thinking that, someone like 3 rows behind me is like, dude, that was awesome. Yeah.
But that's, so that's,
I wish Brett was here to get angry as he does.
He gets really mad about stuff like that. So this brings up an interesting point. We could talk about this for a little while. Is that a joke?
No.
It's not a joke.
I don't think that's a joke. That's
but
why I hate it.
People fucking laugh at it.
That's why, I don't know.
What do they do with it? I mean, did he say hi? Did they have a scene? Or is he just in the background and you're supposed to notice it like an Easter egg?
No. Seth MacFarlane walks into the barn. He sees Doc Brown and he's like, what are you doing in here? And Doc Brown's like, weather experiments, and he's like, oh, okay, and then he walks out of the barn. That's the whole joke. That's the whole bit.
Yeah, it's not a joke.
No, I don't think
it's not a joke.
Yeah, it's a tired reference. But you know what? Hey, if Christopher Lloyd is still alive, that's a win for humanity. Because I didn't know he was. I thought he was dead.
Really?
Yeah,
come on, man.
He's not. I haven't seen him in anything.
He's alive and well. How dare
and
you?
He's well?
Well, I don't know.
Well, he might not be well, but he's alive. Well, that's good. I'm
hey, guys.
Glad he's alive.
He still looks the same.
This one time in college. I like starting a story like that, by the way. This one time in college. We had like a day off. We had nothing to do. And we ended up going to a bar at like noon. And we started drinking. It was during spring break. So we didn't have any obligations. Mm-hmm. So we're at a bar in Mission Beach and we're drinking. And we're looking at the news is on the TV and it was one of those like man on the street segments. And the guy in San Diego, his name was Rod Luck. He was, I don't know if you remember him, Vince, he was particularly annoying. And he's like walking around.
I remember Rod.
He's kind of Huelhauser-esque.
Didn't he have like the Rod's Little Burritos, which was like the little Mexican kids. Anyway, long story on that one. But
I don't know about that, but that's awesome if that's true.
Racist.
So he was just like, he was a little bit Huelhauser-y. Mm-hmm. So he'd be like walking around like, hey, what are you doing? And so he was like at the Mission Beach roller coaster, like just asking people what they were doing for spring break. And then there's this guy walks by who looks exactly like Doc Brown. And he's like, hey, what are you doing? He's like, get that camera out of my face. And it was a live shot and everything. And like, we're cracking up. And then like 10 minutes later, he walks into the bar And so we ended up like just buying a bunch of booze, and I think the cops ended up having to take him out of there.
That's
fun.
That's very Anchorman.
Yeah. And there, it was San Diego,
there
too.
There he is. I know.
Yeah. And we all stayed classy.
I'm going there this weekend. You guys excited for me?
Yeah.
Super. It's great down there. There's a lot of beautiful women.
It's true.
I did a show down there at the Madhouse, and there was so many beautiful women, but they all were with Marines and stuff.
Where's the Madhouse? I don't think that existed when I was...
How beautiful were they?
They were so beautiful that they wouldn't fuck me. It was like in the gas lamp district or something. It was at a mall in the gas lamp.
Yeah. There's that mall there.
Yeah.
We went shopping there last time we were there, Vince.
Did we?
Yeah.
What'd you shop for?
There was that flooding. Last time Vince and I went there together, there was flooding.
Oh, yeah, that was
wild. And I had a hole in the sole of my Chuck Taylor, so we had to go buy like a Foot Locker and get a new pair. What's that mall called? I forget.
Good story. Fashion Valley?
No, because that's not in the gas lamp. It was...
No, not Fulton. That's in Fresno.
Something Plaza or something?
I forget.
Yeah.
No
this
idea.
This is riveting.
It's riveting. Podcast. Anyway, we're going to get Ty West on. Matt, we'll get you back in about half hour.
Okay, I'll be in my room. All
right. Over and out, buddy.
Kill me!
It's always a good time talking to that guy.
Always a good time.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hello.
Yo.
Is this Ty West?
This is.
How's it going?
It's going all right. I was afraid we were going to back out of this like Vanderlei Silva, but it looks like we're going to follow through.
Yeah, no, that's breaking news, by the way.
Yeah.
Did they say why that happened yet?
They called it. He didn't show up for a drug test for the state of Nevada, and they didn't license him.
That's right.
But then the weird, like the cruel irony is that they're going to apparently license Vitor.
Yeah, I don't know how that could possibly... Didn't they say before that they weren't going to let Vitor fight, like, ever again or something?
Yeah, but then the whole... now it's not Keith Kaiser anymore, so maybe... I don't know. Maybe the new people are more open to it. I don't know. It's all very shady to me. All I know is Chael has got a much tougher fight ahead of him now.
Well, I guess. I don't know. It's hard.
Vitor's been throwing a lot of spinning wheel kicks.
Yeah, it's hard to compare TRT Vitor to non-TRT Vitor.
That's true.
How long does it take to wear off? I don't know.
I don't know. I think it goes off pretty quick, but I don't know. And I would say that Dan Hendo looked good. Then again, he just got like chucked around like a rag doll by Cormier. So maybe TRT means something.
Definitely. I would say that it has an effect.
It seems to help. Certainly, Vitor is a totally different fighter than he's ever been. Although he was always on roids, so who knows?
Yeah. I don't know. Brendan, what do you think about steroids?
Steroids are bad. Do not take them.
Did you ever take any?
I never did.
Did you ever want to?
No, I never felt like I had to.
Mm-hmm.
I always say, when people ask me about it, I always say that I felt like the guys who took steroids were the guys who were like 2 or 3 years into their career and hadn't done anything yet mm-hmm. and felt like, you know, I really got to make a push here. And what I always ended up saying was that those just ended up being shitty football players who like increased their max bench and squat by a few pounds.
Yeah.
And they were still really shitty.
Doesn't like make you better at football.
No, I don't think so. Maybe yeah, like when, maybe once you get the NFL
like better at the sport, I guess you just can push a little harder.
Yeah. Like maybe once you get the NFL, there's like some really good shit. But I mean,
think it's more for if you're an aging athlete and you've already got the talent and your sort of body's
recovery.
Your body's breaking down.
Who was the female Olympian racer that like she ran like the 800 or something that kept winning year after year? The U.S. girls, and then she totally came out and was like, I was on all kinds of stuff.
Oh, Marion Jones,
maybe a little sketchier.
Was it Marion Jones? No, she's a hurdler, right?
She did all the sprints.
Maybe it was Marion Jones. That sounds familiar. All I know is then she got totally disgraced and they took away her medals. But
yeah, that was
when you're
Marion
racing,
Jones.
It's kind of like you're down to such any tiny bit of... Like, you don't have to catch a ball. You just have to get from point A to point B as fast as possible. And any little edge you could have is probably like... That seems more of a problem.
Right.
But I don't know. Let them all take roids and just explode.
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like that's the only way to make things fair is just to let everybody take drugs.
Yeah, then everyone will start hitting really big home runs, and it'll be exciting.
Yeah, and I don't know. And if everybody's taking it, then it's your choice. You can you could take it or not, and maybe the people that are good stay around until they're like 40.
I'll say this for the young Frogcast listeners. I don't know about the NFL. They might have some really like high-tech shit once you get there, but like the steroids available to your average high school and college athletes are not good. in fact, everyone I knew that took them was taking like Mexican veterinary steroids. So
unless your dad's a doctor,
yeah, like you're getting the stuff that like Mickey Rourke got in the wrestler,
right? Right, exactly. And literally, I knew guys that were taking like you know Mexican bull hormones and shit. Mm-hmm. And then like the first day of practice, they're like doing high knees to warm up, and they tear their hamstring off their ass bone. And like,
yeah,
and you're like, oh, that injury probably shouldn't happen. So kids,
now I don't know how deep your podcast goes as far as, I guess sports, abuser fans, but we jumped right into it on this one.
Yeah.
So I'm glad we got that debate out of the way right away.
Well, this is how, for all the listeners, this is basically how I know Ty West, even though he also makes films. We tend to talk about MMA a lot, but, you know, you got a movie coming out.
I do. It's not even about MMA at all, which seems so counterproductive. But it's another movie about crazy cult people doing horrible things to each other. So, you know, I try to keep it balanced in my interests.
Would you describe, I mean, it seems like a Vice crew goes to Jonestown, basically.
Yeah, kind of, that's like sort of like a way to sort of reduce it to kind of get the idea of it. But basically what it's about is these like journalists that go to do a story about a commune, and when they get there, it's like pretty groovy and great, and it's like, oh, maybe this is okay, and it turns out not so much. It's really just like, yeah, like Vice Guide to Jonestown is a pretty, like, if you're familiar with Vice stuff and you're familiar with Jonestown stuff, then you'll be pretty familiar with the movie. But for me, it's like, you know, that's kind of describes what happens in the movie, and there's what happens in the movie, and then there's what the movie's about.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, what the movie's about is all the stuff that, you know, like Jonestown has been reduced to like, oh, drink the Kool-Aid. And it's just like a pop culture slogan that people throw around. And it's weird to think that like over 900 people either had a mass suicide or a mass murder. And like, it's been reduced to like drink the Kool-Aid as like a pop culture slogan.
Yeah.
And I've always been really fascinated with People Sample and what happened. And I've always been fascinated with like just how scary it is and how much like those people didn't really have a choice. And then like so much of our, like every day is some new horrific thing on the news, and there's like a very safe distance from it. And I think that horror movies are normally the popular horror movies these days are like escapism. Like you go in and you get scared for an hour and a half watching like zombies, and then you leave and you forget all about it and you go about your day. Whereas like the real life horror stuff that we're so distanced from, despite being bombarded with it by the media, you know, I try to make a movie that reminds you just like, okay, if we take a look back at, say, Jonestown, and I use like a real event as a framework and a real media brand as a way to tell the story, it kind of makes the violence and the horror like confronting and a bit more provocative than like your standard issue horror movie. And that was what was important to me, is to make a movie that was like scary when you watch it, and then when you left, you sort of still felt like shit.
That's cool. That's what I was going to ask you, because I was like envisioning a fan of like the normal horror movies watching this, and I kind of feel like people go to the normal horror movies, like you said, to sort of, you know, there's all this horrible stuff, but if you can compartmentalize it into like a zombie or like, you know, a ghost or some sort of cheesy external threat, it's like this weird escapism. So I'm kind of curious to see how someone who's into that stuff would react to this, where it's like, you know, the horror of real things that happen.
It's actually hit or miss. It's like, you know, some diehard horror fans either like really enjoy the movie and they're like, whoa, it was, I mean, there's also this other thing where when you make a horror movie that doesn't have anything supernatural in it, it becomes this weird sort of like exhausting debate of whether it's a horror movie or not. And as I've traveled around with the movie, people are like, it's not a horror movie. And it's like, this debate seems exhausting and unnecessary. But to me, it's a very horrific movie, and it's about horrific things. So it is a horror movie. But some people, if it doesn't have a monster in it or something supernatural, it's like a thriller. But whatever, that's neither here nor there. But I find that, like, really diehard horror fans, either the movie's not horror enough for them, or a lot of times it's like it's so kind of confronting and so sort of unpleasant with the violence that, like, even, like, diehard horror fans were like, it made me feel weird. Which, again, I think was probably the goal, in a way, was just kind of, like, remind you that there's, like, look, there's violence in movies can be, like, really exciting and really fun and a great visceral experience, but then also violence can be a really upsetting, awful thing. And, you know, this movie is sort of the latter, in that it's sort of reminding you just, like, how scary real people are and how frightening and horrific, like, real violence can be. So it's, yeah. I mean, it definitely leaves you, like, when the movie's over, everyone's kind of like, ugh. And there's a weird sort of, like, quiet, like, people shuffling out of the theater, not quite sure what to do.
Do you get excited? Do you get excited when people walk away feeling bad? You're like, oh, man, I feel like I've done my job this time.
I mean, with this movie, kind of, yeah. I mean, I ideally hope they feel, like, introspective about it, or, like, they what they think about the movie is, like, you know, as bold as that may seem. But I think, like, that's what this movie is about to me, whereas some other movies are more just about the sort of experience. But I always feel like the best movies, or the movies that I at least try to make, there's always what happens in the movie and there's what the movie's about. And those two things are always operating at the same time. And I feel like that's usually what makes, for me personally, a movie good, when I can see something and I'm not getting some sort of, like, social commentary rammed down my throat necessarily, mm-hmm. but, like, the way the scenes are directed, the way the set pieces are set up, or the way it's written, it's like, oh, that was really exciting to watch in some form, but also it made me, like, think about things on a bigger scale later. Like, not like, I wasn't like, well, now I have to think about this, but, like, a week later, you're like, you know what, that scene was interesting, and here's why, and it, like, had people talk about it.
Yeah.
And I think movies have gotten much less like that lately than ever. Unless you want to be like, every comic book movie is some sort of weird, like, 9/11 issue we're all dealing with. But other than that,
but you were
there
saying
isn't this sort of, what's that about 9/11 conflict?
No, but you're saying the horror movie fans like to debate whether, you know, whether it's a horror. And I feel like more so than any other genre, it seems like horror people are really, man. They're really wrapped up in the tropes of it.
And they're very tribal almost.
Yeah.
And it almost seems like contemporary horror movie directors cannot win because you're not doing 50s pulp Wolfman. You know, like, in
it's
a sense,
tricky.
Like,
yeah, I mean, on the one hand, it's great because, like, I have a career because of horror fans, and, like, that's fantastic. And, like, I wouldn't, like, I don't know who would see my movies if it wasn't for them. And that's awesome. And there's something that when you try to do something different, there's a portion of them that are really excited by that. And they're like, oh, great. Like, something different in genre, and this is expanding on what we like. And then there's some people that they're, and I don't think it's even just horror fans, just, like, really diehard movie fans in general. If they have expectations, like for me, if I have expectations for a movie and I see it and it's not what I expected, I just sort of adjust accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
And I might not like the movie or I might like it more, but I just sort of like, I roll with it while I'm watching it. Where a lot of people, if they expect something and it's different than the way they expect, it's like they get so hung up at that moment that like they can't go with the shift. So it's been interesting to see like, you know, real horror fans and the stuff that I do is, I think, you know, fortunately, more people like them than don't, but there's always the element of like, I expected A and I got B and I'm annoyed by it and I can't get past my annoyance of that. So it is, it's a tricky group, but it's also like there is no genre that has a more supportive fan base that basically like keeps it alive and lets all this stuff keep going.
Yeah, it seems like there's an indie market in horror where there isn't in a lot of other stuff. But speaking of movie debates, so when Joe Swanberg fought Devin Faraci at Fantastic Fest, Joe Swanberg, who's in the Sacrament, you were cornering him for that boxing match at Fantastic Fest, correct?
Yes, I did.
And
I gave him a quick, like, I don't know, 2-hour lesson on how to box before he went in there.
It must have worked.
In retrospect, it might have been a little bit overkill, but you know, I don't know. It's like I knew Joe was going in the box, and I was like, look, this is all fun and stuff, but people are still swinging their fists at your head, so let me teach you how to block punches, and let me teach you how to actually throw a real punch. And I don't know, the moral of that story was like straight punches. That's all,
yeah.
That's all you really got to do when you're fighting someone who doesn't know how to fight.
And so the way the Fantastic Fest debates work is like there's two people, and they have like a movie like debate, and then they box afterwards. And so what was Joe Swanberg and Devin Faraci fighting about?
Yeah, it's hard to say anymore. I think where it stemmed from is that Devin wrote a piece about Joe made a movie called Silver Bullets that I'm in, and Devin was not a fan of that movie in the least, which is fair. But his review was, like, incredibly, I don't know, it started getting kind of, like, personal. And, again, even that wasn't that big of a deal. But then after that, Joe did this thing where you signed up for, like, a subscription-type service, and every couple months you got a new movie from him. And it was, like, a thing he was trying out. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think it stemmed from Devin writing a headline that said, like, Joe Swaberg wants you to buy his shitty movies. And yeah. I remember, like, it somehow came up where I was like, dude, that's a weird headline to post. Like, it just seems such a unnecessary use of time to write, to, like, try to stop someone else's career. But I think that's kind of where it stemmed from. I don't think it was a very serious, I don't really have a real problem with Devin, nor do I think Joe did. But it just kind of became one of those, like, it was something to be kind of catty about.
Yeah.
And when Tim League was like, oh, well, here's a fight that makes sense, there was a little bit more animosity to it than there would be, like, a total joke fight. So, I don't think neither of them really dislike each other. I just think it was like, they were bitching at each other about some things, and it was just like, this will be a fun way to sort of, you know, deal with it. And it was, like, a little bit more real than some of the more, like, goof fights at Fantastic Fest, which made it kind of exciting because it was like, I don't know, I've been to Fantastic Fest for the last 6 or 7 years, and I've seen all the fights, and they're great, but, like, there's very few that feel like they're a real fight, and that one felt like each of them really wanted to beat each other.
Yeah, I didn't like how Keanu, the one Fantastic Fest that I've been to, Keanu Reeves was in a debate, but then for the boxing portion, he let his stunt coordinator do the fighting for him.
Trial by champion.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that's the tricky thing about someone like Ting Lee, who's like a true like P.T. Barnum type person in the film world, and that he wants to put on this great event. And I think that Tim really wants real fights.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, not that many people really don't. Like, the community of Fantastic Fest is, like, pretty mellow and positive. So, like,
yeah,
there really aren't people that dislike each other. And then if you try to get, like, famous actors involved, like, that's a lose-lose situation for them.
Yeah.
So, you know, unless you get, like, even if you went and got, like, a guy, like an action movie martial arts guy, like, or an MMA fighter.
Like Steven Seagal.
In there. He can't go in and just beat the shit out of Tim Lee. He'll look like a psychopath.
Yeah.
But also, he can't go in there and not beat up Tim Lee, because it'll be like, boo. So it's like lose-lose in those worlds. So it's a tricky balance, which is why I think the Joe and Devin one was such a great one, in that it was like, oh, it was like we actually found one that was like 70% a real thing, and that made it fun.
Mm-hmm.
So there's usually one good one of all four. Like, there's like four fights every year, and usually there's always one standout each time.
Yeah. I got a little too drunk at this last one. I don't really remember. I don't remember there being one standout. I do remember Tim League and Keanu stunt coordinator.
Well, the thing about Tim is that Tim started with him wanting to be like, he's never been beat up before and he wants to try that. And every year he gets some new, like, you know, it started with Uwe Boll, and then it went to like Michelle Rodriguez, and then it was the guy from the Knuckle documentary.
Yeah.
And then he got like this like weird old man like Taekwondo guy, and that was arguably the worst. And it was just like he kept trying to find someone that would really fight him.
Did he get? He got
but
one of the guys from
guys
Knuckle.
Show up. Did he, yeah, he fought the dude from Knuckle.
But oh, really?
Did they race horse buggies?
Exactly. But so like they made some pretty classic tapes, you know, calling each other out. But what happened was,
oh, those were so good.
Tim Lee's like one of the. He's like one of the greatest people alive. So they get there, and then they're like, well, I don't want to beat up this guy. He's great.
Yeah.
Look at this great event he's doing and this great stuff. So I don't know. It's going to be hard for Tim to find someone who really – it's hard to find anyone that doesn't like Tim, but I think he'll have to find someone like that to really give it to him.
which guy was it? Was it the – I mean, which guy from Knuckle was it?
I'm sorry. I forgot.
The name, dude, James – I can't remember his last name. James, I'm sure it's Mick something.
McDonald.
Oh, my God. I forgot how much – that movie is amazing. Because it's like they –
it's
like there's a whole order to it. Like you make the WWF basically type – like the Piper's Corner tape, and then like you fight, and it's like kind of refereed, but then you could also like alternatively choose to like race someone in a horse buggy on a freeway. Like the rules are absurd.
The gypsy culture is pretty, I mean, it's pretty remarkable. In a world where everything has been sort of homogenized into like, no matter where you are in the world right now, someone's just sitting behind a computer. It's good to know that somewhere in the UK and in Ireland, there's like, these weird gypsy people that are like, well, here's how we handle this.
There's some guys, still like,
my cousin on the video
they're currying, videotapes, like VHS tapes to each other.
Yeah, and pouring gas on their hands and racing buggies in the street.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way. That's maybe Tim should think about doing. Maybe we should do a bare knuckle fight next year. Maybe that's just keep up in the ante.
Yeah. But okay, so back to the movie. Like the set, I mean, I've seen all the Jonestown documentaries, so I noticed that the set mm-hmm. was very much modeled. I mean, modeled off of the Jonestown site. Also, it gave me weird flashbacks to Gathering of the Juggalos, like the whole, like the way it looked, everything, like the big open grass field, like surrounded by like this weird, like marshy. Where did you shoot it?
We shot it in Savannah, Georgia, and it's just a hayfield in someone's backyard, and we built everything. So maybe if it's still there, the Juggalos can rent it for their next gathering.
Yes, but especially the part where they're like driving through the trees and then there's nothing and then all of a sudden there's like this weird campground somewhere. Like that was exactly like that.
So, I mean, I'm glad to hear the Gathering of the Juggalos is basically like Jonestown.
Yeah. I got a little PTSD when I was watching the movie.
I know. It's too bad it didn't end the same way. But it was hard. I mean, we just like the easiest way to do it was just to build everything. Like I thought maybe we'll find some old summer camp, but that seemed like too far-fetched an idea. And then we just like, well, we found a clearing and here's what we need to build. And if we had a little more time, a little more money, we would have built a little bit more. But you know, that was kind of like, I have this production designer named Jay Healy that's done every movie with me. And I'm in New Mexico now. She started building today on this new movie and she's just really great. And I was like, look, let's build our Jonestown, our Eden Parish. And we modeled it like visually after it, because again, with making a movie that was about realism and about confronting real violence, I wanted to use like a real event as the framework. Like it's not exactly Jonestown, but mm-hmm. it follows like very similar to what happened in the last 48 hours at Jonestown. And I wanted to use a real event, and then I wanted to use a real media brand, because I wanted to kind of have this like overwhelmingly visceral sense of like realism to it, that when you watch the movie, you're like, I can't help but think about the real stuff. And so when these people in this movie are being happy, or the people in the movie are being upset or being killed, like you can't help but go like, whoa, this is connected to something real. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like raising the stakes a bit more. And I think, again, making me hopefully introspective about it. So we just sort of built this place to kind of look very similar to the way Jonestown, to just kind of keep calling on those like ingrained memories.
Yeah, they're like, I mean, especially the pavilion part where the main interview takes place, uh-huh. and then the little cabins. But did you have to talk to Vice about this beforehand, or how did that go, or did you just put it?
Yeah, no, that would be like really bold to just like go, I'm sure it'll be fine. I like basically before we made the movie, I knew I wanted to use a real brand. I wanted to use Vice because I think they're at the forefront of like video journalism. And, you know, they're also known for doing these sort of like fringe stories, but as they become more and more of a reputable news outlet, they're just like, they don't have a political agenda as far as I'm concerned. Like they don't, if it was like Fox News, then the whole movie would have to have this like right wing angle to it. If it was MSNBC, yeah. It would have to have this like super liberal aspect. And the media that I feel like is at the forefront of video journalism that doesn't feel like they, like Vice has their own brand and their own vibe. But they don't feel like they have a political agenda. They feel pretty, they're subjective, but they feel like, oh, these dudes are honestly taking in what's around them. Mm-hmm. And so they made the most sense to me, and I knew them a little bit. And so, you know, I asked them, I was like, look, you know, the movie's not about Vice. It really has nothing to do with your company. It's just I want these people to work for a real brand. I think what you're doing is great. You know, the movie could open with a peacock and go boom, 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 and be NBC. It just doesn't. It opens at Vice because I think that it's more like poignant to today's like era where that's happening. And also I think when you're doing embedded journalism during like a war, there's this idea that like, well, you're press and you're objective to the thing and you're not part of the conflict and you're in another country and there's an idea of rules of engagement. Mm-hmm. When you're doing these small stories like Vice has done and gone to these weird places and they're the only people there, you know, I think that Vice is really smart about the way they do things, so it doesn't totally apply to the movie. But it becomes interesting of, like, in the sacrament, these journalists, like, the lines are blurred. Like, okay, you're not supposed to get involved, but you're not, like, in Afghanistan. You're, like, in this place that nobody knows about. So if you don't get involved, literally nobody else will. And so what do you, like, with the blurred lines of, like, well, what do you do then? And I think because, you know, even, like, our news, like, if it's raining out, there's someone like, we're out here in the rain. Like, we're so adamant about like putting people in the position that it's like, and then they have no accountability for any of it. And I, and so it's, to me, it was just like, well, if you're a regular person, journalist or not, if you're the only one that can help this situation, that's complicated. And, you know, it, it kind of tests the kind of person you are.
Yeah. And like, where did you, you had a ton of extras in this. Like, there's so many scenes where there's just like a huge crowd of them. Like, where did you, were they locals or where did you find everybody?
Yeah, they were all local. I mean, we, I would, you know, the extra casting girl, I probably made cry on several occasions because the whole movie is really contingent on the members of Eden Parish being like believable. And we just tried really, the easiest way to say it is we tried really hard and found an amazing group of people. And I never want to make a movie with a lot of extras again because it went so well on this movie that it could never go that easy again. But we just got a phenomenal group of people that were just like, they were down and they were into it. And whether, like, people always ask too, like, oh, when it starts doing all the sort of suicide stuff or violent stuff, how did you, like, how did the extras deal with, you know, poisoning their children and things like that? And it's like, you understand they spent the last week walking around 400 yards in the background with a basket. So now that the camera's right near them, they're like, bring it. Bust out the Kool-Aid, let's go. And so they were just so into the movie. And I work with the same people on every movie. So like, our, even though the movie's vibe is so grim, the vibe on set was pretty mellow. And I think everyone was just genuinely having a pretty good time. And I don't know, it was one of those weird things where like, they were into it. And when I saw they were into it, I gave them more shots and I was like, let's get everybody really involved so everybody feels a part of it. Yeah. And if that didn't work, the movie wouldn't work. And so it's really like a testament to them. And like, I'm very fortunate that we found the people we did.
So what was that? Like, what was the first movie that you made and what was like, what was the process of getting it together? Like,
I made the first film I made, it was in 2005 and it's called The Roost. And it's sort of like this pulpy kind of midnight movie kind of thing about these kids going to a wedding and their car breaks down and then they stop at this house and there's like a big barn and it's full of vampire bats and all hell breaks loose. And it's sort of like a ridiculous, like late night B movie kind of thing. And the way I got that movie made was, in college I had a teacher my first year there was Kelly Reichardt. And now everyone's like pretty hip to Kelly Reichardt because of Old Joy and Wendy and Lucy and Meek's Cut Off and she has Night Moves coming out. But at the time she'd only made a movie called River of Grass. And I had seen that movie. And the guy who paid for that movie and acted in that movie and edited that movie was a guy named Larry Fessenden. And he had also made a movie called Habit, which I had seen, which is a really groovy, like, 90s vampire flick. And she would always bring people she knew into class to, like, speak. And I don't know that anyone really ever cared. And she was like, I'm going to bring in this guy, Larry Fessenden. And I was the only person who knew who he was. And she was like, dude, you know what? Here's his phone number. I'm not going to bring him in. Just call him. And so I went and met him. And then he saw my short films over the years. And we just got along. And then when I graduated school, I was at the School of Visual Arts in New York. I graduated and he was like, what are you going to do? I was like, I don't know. I guess move to LA or write a script, whatever you're supposed to do. And he was like, well, the only thing stopping you from making a movie was money. What if I gave you a little bit of money? And I, of course, lied and said, well, I already have a script ready and everything. And I just went home and wrote a script really quickly and brought it back to him. And he was like, all right, let's see if we can get it made. So he gave me and a lot of the crew I still work with today, like $50,000, and we went off and we made this movie called The Roost. And that was in 2005, so that's when people still sort of bought movies.
Yeah.
So we were able to like get that movie done and we put it at South by Southwest and it went well. We sold it to like Showtime and this company Vitagraph who did theatrical. And then like all in all that movie ended up like, I think we sold it for like, after the theatrical, Larry probably invested like $100,000 into that movie at the end of the day. But like we sold it for like $365,000 with everything. So it was like, I don't know where any of that money went, but like it was the kind of thing where it was like, oh, like we made this little movie. We got to do it the way we wanted. This great guy gave me money to make a movie and like creative freedom. And then like it made its money back and like it came out. And then that's kind of where the snowball started rolling. And I've just been trying to keep it going ever since.
So do you feel obligated to make a similar like styles of movies or is that just what you're into?
No, and in fact, like, I try to do the opposite. I mean, The Sacrament's going to be the last horror movie I make for a while just because I've made, like, 7 and 10 years, and that's a fucking lot. but I think that, like, for me, I don't really want to repeat myself, and although the movies I've made are, like, genre horror movies, I think they feel like my movies. Like, I think you can see a movie by me, and, like, even if you hate it, you can be like, I can tell it's by that guy. And I've been able to sort of like write and direct and edit all my movies. So it's like, it's kind of my own thing. So even though I'm working within the same genre, it's like, they're weird, like personal movies to me, even though that sounds silly because it's like genre movies, but I'm just like, here's what I want to make a movie about. And then I write it. And then I've been fortunate to be able to get them made. And I had one experience where I did it slightly more as a work for hire, and it was like a disaster. And I spent like 2 years trying to get my name taken off of that movie. And it was just a horrible experience. And after that, I was like, I don't ever want to do that again. I just want to like, I want to just keep doing my thing. And thankfully, after that terrible experience, I had a very good experience with this movie I made called The House of the Devil. And that kind of like fixed that problem of I got screwed right before that. And I was worried that like I was going to be fucked. But then House of the Devil did well. And it sort of like erased that problem. And then after that, I was like, I gotta just keep doing my own thing. And I've almost done some bigger movies and like Hollywoodish kind of stuff and big stuff. And I've been in the mix for a lot of big stuff, but at the end of the day, it's like, you know, I think my personality is like difficult when I'm not doing it like from the ground up, and it's the only way it makes sense to me. So I'm just kind of keeping going. But the movie I'm making now is a Western. So it's not all the, you know, people are getting shot and stuff, but it's not a horror movie.
Is it going to be like A Million Ways to Die in the West? I just saw that one.
I don't think so. I don't think it's going to be anything like that.
No dance numbers?
They did shoot that right near where we're shooting.
Oh, really?
But I'll try to do the opposite of that. It's going to be like, how was that movie, by the way?
I mean, it's like most Seth MacFarlane stuff where it's like three jokes that I enjoy and then one that just makes me groan really hard. And then I have to sort of, I sort of have to weigh. And then you just, I don't know, with comedy, like I really have a hard time with comedy where I can feel the formula. And I think Seth MacFarlane's really clever, but I also think he's really good at learning from the things he's done in the past. So there's all these joke moments where you can tell where he's like, oh, I'm redoing this one thing that worked really well in Family Guy season 2. And like, I put it in everything.
Well, and he'll literally repeat certain joke templates or certain jokes even. And it's like this snake sucking its own dick.
Yeah, so there's like this mix of jokes. There's this mix of genuinely clever jokes, really bad referencey jokes, and then jokes that are like okay, but that I can feel the formula too. So I don't know. It's a mixed bag.
Yeah, if I was either going to make this Western or I was going to write this comedy movie, and then Ethan Hawke wanted to do this Western, and that kind of got it momentum going. So like, that's why I'm making a Western. But yeah, I don't know. I'm very particular about like movies that I find funny. It's like I'm generally either all in or like all out with stuff. So it's like, you know, I've been watching the new season of Louie, which I think is great. I think it's like really funny all in. And I think it's also like really smart and great. And a lot of it's not really just coming from like wacky performances. It's coming from like, oh, the writing is genuinely really funny.
Yeah. And he's like, not afraid to make it super weird.
Like what he's saying and also what it's about is both really funny things. And that's just like, I understand that's harder. But like that's to me, that's the bar.
Yeah.
So, well, we got to at least do that good. But I get a lot of like sort of mainstream comedy stuff. I don't see a lot of it. So maybe I'm just talking out of my ass. But like I saw part of like The Heat on TV in my hotel room the other day.
Yeah.
I don't understand this. Like I don't understand the world that thought this movie was really funny at all.
I saw the previews and I was like, nope, that is not for me.
Which one's that?
The movie is so much more than the previews.
Melissa McCarthy?
It's
so much less funny than the previews.
Is
it
really?
Hard to explain, but
I actually saw a little bit of it.
Like I can't imagine anyone actually laughing at it. But this is how wrong I am, is it was like a number one movie in America.
My fiance,
every moment of that movie, I can't picture a human being that's like, love that movie.
My fiance insisted on watching it.
So many.
Yeah.
And it was miserable. I watched like 45 minutes and I had to leave. I couldn't watch it anymore. It's so bad.
Well, that guy, Adam Ray, who plays the bad guy. I've done a comedy show with that guy. He's really cool and super charming. But I haven't, I just saw the, like I said, I just saw the style. And like you, I'm like, I don't know how to live in the world where that is. I don't live in the world where that's really funny.
Do you remember we went and saw Dinner for Schmucks in the theaters?
Yeah.
And it was like this bizarre world where we were just looking at each other like, I can't believe people think this is funny. And the people behind us were like, it was like Robert De Niro in Cape Fear. They were dying.
Yeah.
They were laughing so fucking hard.
I know that experience. I know the feeling.
Yeah,
like
bizarre.
I remember, this is a movie that everybody really likes. And I don't get it. But I was at South By and I was at the premiere of Kick-Ass.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a sold out 1500 seat theater. And it was me and a friend of mine. And I was like, this will be fun, not whatever. And I didn't get it. Like I didn't get any of it at all for 1 second. And this is how wrong I am, because 1,498 other people were like loving every second of it. And it was like this weird moment where I was just like, I'm so out of touch with what most people like. And that was like a really defined, like, I don't have anything really against the movie, but that was the moment that I realized, like, my taste is like super esoteric and fucked up. And even though I don't feel like it is, I'm living the proof right now because I'm the only one in this room that's not enjoying this.
It's hard to be confronted with that sometimes.
It is. It's weird. Like, it was like I remember walking at home after that theater, like, this is like, I'm very like, I've got a lot to deal with after watching Kick-Ass in this audience.
Yeah. Yeah. So you gotta, are you on your way? You gotta do the gym thing?
I do. I'm going to jiu-jitsu right after this.
Nice.
So just keeping my esoteric, like, painfully uninteresting things to other people at a high while I'm here in New Mexico.
I thought you were a kickboxing guy. What's up?
I do both. Okay. I did kickboxing yesterday, and then I'll do jiu-jitsu tonight, and then Friday is sparring kickboxing, so I'll get back in there.
Nice.
But it's weird because I leave L.A., and, like, you so quickly get out of shape because I have a very, like, strict routine of, like, I'm in the gym every morning, and, like, I go to this Muay Thai. There's a guy, Joe Schilling, who's fighting in Glory. I train at his gym. And it's great. It's the best gym I've ever been to. But, like, when I leave there, like, panic sets in. Because also I'm at, like, 8,000 feet elevation. So, mm-hmm. like, jumping rope, I'm, like, gasping for air. So it's, you know, these are my sort of, like, very bourgeois problems that I have here.
No, but yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's hard to find, like, a that kind of specific gym when you're traveling a lot.
Yeah, like, there's, you know, CrossFit helps because, like, now those are everywhere. So you can at least get, like, a pretty gnarly workout in somewhere. But, you know, if you take a week off, it, like, your lungs give out pretty quick on you. And so even just Memorial Day and then being down here at this elevation, are just the simplest stuff, I found myself, like, gasping.
Yeah.
And it just, I don't like that feeling.
Well, for the record, I just want to say that the Sacrament's opening June 6th, and I was right about Henderson versus Cormier. So
you were. I was way off on that one. But although, who thought Dillashaw was going to make such easy work of Burrell?
Yeah, I don't know. There's a couple people on our pool who picked it, and I was like, who, what? There's no way in a million years I would have picked that one.
No way. Well, lastly then, what do you got for Matt Brown and Robbie Lawler?
You know, that's a tough one. You know, I got to go Lawler.
That's a
real
tough fight.
Lawler's like on an epic tear. I don't think.
Yeah.
I mean, Matt Brown is too, but... Yeah.
Matt Brown also has that thing of, like, he's always been the guy that gets to the guy right before the guy and then loses the streak. So I don't know. Hopefully he's gotten past that, but that'll be a good fight regardless.
Yeah.
You know who's not winning any of these fights? Nick Diaz.
I know. What's going on with that? He knocked out Lawler.
I don't know. Yeah.
I'm going to travel to Stockton and find, like, whatever abandoned junkyard he's hanging out in with the pregnant pit bull and and get him back here to fight.
I know. You got to write in that check for $500,000 if you have to. Put
right.
Put it out there. Just some real boxing, some real jiu-jitsu.
I bet we could kickstart that.
That's true. That's what all the MMA underground people should do. They should start a kickstart. Instead of complaining to Dana about not paying Diaz to get back in the mix, they should just start a Kickstarter to get him out there to fight, you know, Cain Velasquez or whoever Diaz wants to fight these days.
He just needs like a matching. We'll get like a matching deal with Dana White. Like if we kickstart $100,000, you got to put up 200 and, you know, something like that.
Yeah. And then you know, he's going to get fight of the night.
Of course.
So don't be scared, homie.
All right, man. Thanks for coming on.
All right. I appreciate it. Good times talking to you guys. Have a good night.
You too.
Bye.
All right. That was fun.
That was great.
I feel like we need to have him on, one, when we have longer, and then maybe two, just when he doesn't have a movie and we can just like talk about bullshit.
Yeah, we got to figure out how to not interfere with his jits, man.
That's right. Well, you know,
We all got a jits.
Get Matt back on the line here.
Okay.
He's better than me. I took like a week off. I get a sore knee ligament.
They get loose.
They get so loose.
Hey.
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 Hey, how'd it go?
It went really well.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Sweet.
I've just been sitting here just kind of playing with my dick.
So I did want to say this about A Million Ways to Die in the West. By the way, when you're talking about Dinner for Schmucks, that is still – my gold standard of movies that are just like, not only, like, I feel like Seth MacFarlane, sometimes he's like mildly funny or mediocrely funny. He's never like anti-funny.
Right.
Yeah.
Dinner for Schmucks was like anti-funny.
It's anti-funny.
There's like, I feel like there's levels of it. There's like meh, and then there's like unfunny, like Gabriel Iglesias when he's doing like, aloha fluffy. I'm just sort of like, I don't hate it. I'm just like, what? Why? I don't care. And then there's like anti-funny, which is Dinner for Schmucks, where it's just like the shrillest, like someone's fucking trying to jam a thumbtack in my ear the whole time.
Oh, yeah, that's the worst movie. That is, I actually walked out of that movie.
We did too.
I've only ever walked out of two movies. The other one was Lemony Snicket's something or other movie.
Really? You know, I like that movie.
Yeah, I kind of like that one too.
I like that movie.
I got about 20 minutes in, and I was like, what am I doing? I know, like, I'm too old for this. I just was like, I thought I was into Jim Carrey, but it was like that moment where I grew up a little bit. I'm like,
yeah, it was good. My name is Stefano. I am an Italian man.
I don't even know if I got that far. I don't remember.
Probably not. That's more than 20 minutes into it.
I don't remember that at all.
It was one of his characters.
But I just walked out because I was like, I could do other things. And then I just like walked out and I was able to get my money back, which I was like, all right, that's cool that you can do that.
There's lots of like kind of your typical like, you know, aughts, early teens comedy trope is something happening to someone, them screaming really loud, and then someone else being like, that happened. And then a bunch of guys screaming.
Yeah, I hate the reaction shot.
Yeah.
And Seth MacFarlane's really big on the reaction shot. Like something funny happens and it's like, all right, if he'd have just left it that, I'd be okay with it. But he's got to throw in like himself being like, oh my God, that went wrong so fast.
Right.
Did you see that? Yeah. There's a lot of that.
Did that just happen?
Yeah. Although I kind of like Ted though. Like if Ted is on, I'll watch it.
So here's the weird thing. So the other night I was in Portland with my buddy and he had Ted on DVD and I'd never seen it. And he put it on and it was like late. We'd been golfing all day. So I watched about like 20, 25 minutes of it and I thought it was pretty funny. So then I fell asleep and then like I saw just a maybe 5 minutes of it when it was on TV and it was like a 5 minute chunk where Ted the bear is doing like a Peter Griffin impression from Family Guy.
Right.
And if I would have just seen that scene, I would have thought that it was the worst fucking movie that ever existed.
Right, yeah.
Sort of like if I would have just seen the Doc Brown scene of A Million Ways to Die in the West, I would have thought it was like a terrible movie.
Wait, wasn't that basically his voice in the whole movie though?
Yes.
No, he did Brian. Brian was his voice in the whole movie. He does a Peter Griffin impression in the movie.
Yeah.
Does he say like, I'm Peter Griffin?
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. He says like, what are you talking about? I don't sound like Peter Griffin or something like that.
Oh,
he does like it's a self-referential, self-indulgent thing.
I fucking hate fourth wall breaking comedy.
Awful.
Okay, so I'm gonna tie this all back to current events. Not to the sacrament.
Okay, uh-huh.
That would be hard, actually.
Where's the plane, Obama?
So this Washington Post columnist Ann Hornaday, she wrote an op-ed. In the wake of the Elliot Rodgers UC Santa Barbara killing.
Yeah.
And she said, how many students watch outsized frat boy fantasies like Neighbors and feel, as Roger did, unjustly shut out of college life that should be full of sex and fun and pleasure? How many men raised on a steady diet of Judd Apatow comedies in which the schlubby arrested adolescent always gets the girl and find that those happy endings constantly elude them and conclude it's not fair? So then, of course, you know, Seth Rogen and Judd Apatow got really angry that she said that, which I think is fair.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I will say this. I watched A Million Ways to Die in the West and Chef almost back to back. And I went from a movie where Jon Favreau wrote himself a love triangle between Scarlett Johansson and Sofia Vergara and to Seth MacFarlane writing himself a love triangle between Amanda Seyfried and Charlize Theron. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like, I don't necessarily think it's like sexist or there's like something evil about it, but it's kind of like you wrote yourself a movie where you play like a fucking astronaut, superhero, mountain climbing billionaire. You know, it's like every single movie that you write.
We pull this reference on the show a lot, but the Dave Chappelle Show sketch of Antoine Fisher, written by Antoine Fisher.
Like, I mean, how many fucking movies? It just seems like not even just show a little self-awareness, maybe don't write yourself that low. And it's not like I don't think that either of those, like in a vacuum. All right, if Jon Favreau was a famous chef, maybe he'd fucking bang a chick that looks like Sofia Vergara. I don't think it's like out of the realm of possibilities. But when it's like every movie, it's kind of like, all right, do you guys not notice the pattern here? And do you not sense like a little bit of self-awareness about?
Yeah, but to equate that to being one of the reasons that a guy mass murders people.
Oh, no, that's ridiculous. But,
several steps removed.
Yeah, that's several steps removed. But I do.
I mean, yeah, that does happen in movies.
From a movie viewer standpoint, not from trying to prevent a mass murder. Like, okay. I don't think that has anything to do with it. But from a movie viewer standpoint, in the love triangle, they always go for the non-superficial funny girl. Maybe once make the non-superficial funny girl not a Playboy model.
Yeah, that's it is. I'd be too embarrassed to write a movie starring myself where I'm banging a bunch of chicks. I don't know. I don't see it as a problem. I mean, there's a problem there, but it's just the context of what she wrote about was just so infuriating that I don't even want to comment on the issue of whether or not these schlubby guys should be getting girls in movies.
Yeah, it's kind of like every time something like that happens when you're like trying to pull cultural influences, it's kind of like, all right, really?
Yeah, just like that. It just seems so lame and opportunist. Like, it just seems like the weakest argument for why someone would mass murder someone is because Seth Rogen writes, you know, movies where he actually gets with girls.
Also, like the mass murderer, you know, he's got a Facebook page with like 8,000 selfies. He's got like every picture that's not a selfie is like him flying first class somewhere or like on the red carpet or in a luxury vehicle. It's like,
right,
of all the angles you had to take,
you
went with like, oh, he watched too many stoner comedies.
Too many Judd Apatow movies.
Right. Like, it was so bizarre. Like, he's clearly like a very disturbed person and very narcissistic. And then the videos are a whole different world. And it's like, yeah, I think this guy watched Knocked Up too many times.
It's actually a really confusing thing because, like, people are having trouble pinning what exactly to blame it on. Because, like, apparently he was a part of an anti-pickup artist community, which I didn't know that there was an anti-pickup artist community other than, like, you know, just kind of like, I guess, being a basic gentleman and like maybe feminists might hate pickup artists. But apparently did you guys hear about this? Anti-PUA?
Yeah. I'm so aware was of it. He part of the anti-PUA?
He was part of the anti-PUA group, like this message board about people who hate pickup artists because of all the false promises that, you know, pickup artistry makes.
Yeah.
Also, much better reasons to hate PUAs than their techniques didn't work for me.
Oh, yeah. No, it's weird because they all...
Not for that guy.
They all still agree that, like, yes, women are scum.
What a sad, sad fucking subset of people. Have you ever actually met a real PUA in real life? They're like awful, miserable, just sad, sad people.
Yeah, pretty much across the board. The only difference is like these guys are PUA people who have given up. And they're like, we're still going to hold on to the fact that we hate women. That's for sure. But we're also, they call themselves, I think it's called incels, involuntary celibates.
Yeah. I've heard. I was introduced to that term by reading about this case.
It's just really weird because, like, then there was people on message boards who were like, you know, the news media outlets as well are like, you know, is it pickup artists to blame? But it's like maybe pickup artists, but he seemed to be anti pickup artists, so it's hard to exactly blame it on that. It's just it's a real clusterfuck of people trying to figure out why this happened.
I was reading part of his manifesto, and it would just be like the most boring, comically stupid thing in the world. And like the whole video, like so much of the shit that guy did would just be comically stupid and pathetic if he hadn't killed a bunch of people.
I like it. Well, that was what my first email that I sent to all you guys said, where I was like, this would actually be funny if you didn't realize what happened a couple hours later. And there was one part, at one point he's like, well, I did it. I went and sat in the mall for 2 hours and not a single girl approached me. This is bullshit. And like, Jesus. So I guess he just like sat in the mall in Santa Barbara and waited for girls to walk up to him, and they didn't. And then he got angry and said, fuck this, I'm going home.
I love the idea. It's like, I deserve so much more. Like, I deserve this. And I just, I love the idea that, that you deserve to get pussy, where it's like, you're a car salesman. I deserve to sell more cars. Like, no, either your cars suck or you're a shitty salesman or some combination of the two.
Right.
No one's just going to come buy a car because you're a nice guy, dummy.
Yeah, maybe it's because every time you try to sell me a car, you look and sound like a mass murderer.
Yeah.
Like, it just so, he's so clearly disturbed that, I mean, I guess you wouldn't expect self-awareness from an insane person, but it was just... It was sick, man. I saw the video of him in the car talking about what he was going to do. I think on Reddit, like maybe an hour or so after he had done it, or like a couple hours after he had done it, it was posted on Reddit. Or it was actually posted before he did it on Reddit under like a subreddit called Cringe. Mm-hmm. And I was watching it. I was like, Jesus, this guy's an asshole. And then I look into the comments and it's like, he just did this tonight. And I was like, holy fuck, he actually fucking did it. It's it was pretty disturbing shit.
Wasn't this the second thing that happened at UCSB? I guess so. No, someone like used their car to kill a bunch of people at UCSB last time, wasn't it?
For the same reasons?
Yeah, he was just a psycho. Yeah, kind of. I mean, not for the exact same reasons, but
yeah. Jesus. Yeah, and he fucking killed his roommates too. I mean, like, just imagine living with this fucking loser, and you have to. Oh God! Oh, it's too depressing. Why are we talking about? I hate this guy. He's the worst type of human being. Just a fucking crazy man, just killing people.
Just and a sad, unfuckable loser.
Starting with the name.
Yeah. You mean Elliot Rodger?
How could you be? I can't imagine being friends with a Firsty Firsty like that.
Yeah.
Now we have evidence that Firsty Firsties are just as dangerous as three first name people.
Right?
Yeah. Those are both people who I am not friends with.
The only thing that can stop a bad guy with two first names is a good guy with two first names and a gun. A guy with two first names and a gun.
Oh, yeah. I wish he hadn't killed himself, too. Once again, you know, it's like another one of these mass murderers who just fucking offs himself. Just like, God damn it. I want the chance to fucking just fucking... I don't know. Maybe it's more of a curiosity. It's like half of me wants him to go to jail for the rest of his life. The other half wants me to. I just kind of want to hear him. I don't know. I guess that you kind of want a reason why a little bit.
I don't know. There's no reason why. He's a defective retard. I'm just surprised. I mean, I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often. There's like, I ride my bike through the Tenderloin every day, and I see like at least 50 defective people. You know, like
yeah. But usually they all just hurt themselves.
Yeah,
you know?
And I feel like they're also beaten down. Like they don't feel like they are entitled to anything. Whereas like a lot of his rage came from this misplaced entitlement.
Yeah, where he's like thought he was the
fucking... I drive a BMW.
Oh God. Yeah, I mean, what sucks too is like as a as someone who
gets a lot of pussy.
No, as someone who didn't get laid for all of high school and like, all men to some degree have a similar feeling of being like, fuck these like dudes, who's hot dudes, who girls just fuck and they're mean.
Is she really going out with him?
Yeah, exactly. You know, like we all have that kind of like
pretty
like,
women are walking with gorillas down my street. Yeah, it's the same fucking song. When did that song come out?
It was in Fast Times, right? Yeah. So the 70s, the early 80s.
Yeah, and it's like it's something that you know, you just eventually you just you figure it out. I don't know. Yeah, he's crazy. Whatever. Fuck him.
That's why I fucking hate Love Actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because every single vignette, if you think about every single vignette of that movie, it's some guy who likes some girl. And instead of you know, talking to that girl or like saying, hey, I like you, and like trying to relate to that girl, he does some like comically Hallmarky
over the top
thing where he embarrasses her in some sort of public place. Like he just like sits there and stews and wonders like why she doesn't like him, and then does some like crazy over the top thing. Like the guy, you know, my favorite one is the guy who likes Keira Knightley.
Yeah,
Keira Knightley marries Solomon Northup from 12 Years a Slave.
Right,
and you know, instead of like ever saying anything about it, he waits till she marries his friend, and then he goes to her house with like a series of 20 cue cards for some reason.
Yeah, the creepiest scene in cinema history that was meant to be cute.
Whenever I talk to girls about that, if they think that scene is cute, I'm like, all right, well, this is never gonna work out.
Swipe left.
Yeah.
Real life swipe left. I think that's just hitting someone. So don't do it. Yeah, no, that is a creepy ass scene. You know, in the context of the movie and the fact that the guy's like super cute, so it's okay.
Oh, isn't that a sweet gesture?
Oh my God, I'm so glad that he told her, who is now married, that he loves her.
Yeah. Hey, you know, it'd be a sweeter gesture. Them talking, them just hanging out. Maybe he wants to make her some food one night, and he's like, hey, come over, let's watch Game of Thrones, and fuck.
Yeah, or he could just not tell her because, you know, missed his chance.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's just real life. That's what happened.
You didn't watch Casablanca with us, but that was the message of that movie, where it's like, all right, you love this chick, but guess what? You missed your shot. Let it go.
Deal with it.
Yeah, exactly.
That whole movie was just putting sunglasses over itself.
It was.
Brendan really wanted to talk about the moth joke.
Yeah. I love the moth joke. I love it so much.
This is feel like this is Norm Macdonald at peak Norm Macdonald. Yeah. Norm Macdonald-iness.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sitting with Norm Macdonald, and
I don't know when this happened. You know when this came out?
I think it's fairly recently.
Really?
I
feel like it was old.
Yeah, I think it might be a few years old.
Let me Google this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
If you search Norm Macdonald's name, moth joke is the second result.
Yeah, you're right.
I just saw it's been blowing up online lately, so I just assumed
2011
it was.
Is one of the videos.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, 2011.
Wow. Oh, it's just been blowing up so much lately that I figured it was recent.
Yeah, it's because he's on The Tonight Show when he's doing this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's timeless.
Yeah, well, what I mean is, like, you know, Conan was only on The Tonight Show for, you know, like 9 months.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Bro, I wasn't reacting to you, okay? I was just saying it's timeless because, you
know. All right, shit, God.
Fuck.
I can't tell because I can't see your faces.
From the news, is that right? You know,
no, some of my material comes, my strongest material comes from real life.
Real life?
Like, for instance, today I was driving in a car. Mm-hmm. You were kind enough to bring a car to bring this old chunk of coal here to the studio.
We send cars for our guests, yes.
Yeah, so I got in it, and I get material that way. So my driver.
What do you mean? How do you get material that way? You get in the car, and what happens?
My driver tells me a joke.
The driver we sent to pick you up told you a joke.
Yeah.
And you're going to tell it now on the show.
Yeah, that's how I get a lot of my material.
Okay. Why don't we just have him on next time?
That guy. No, wait till you hear me do it. So the guy, he goes, I'll be the guy.
Okay.
A moth goes into a podiatrist's office.
A moth goes into a podiatrist's office. Right.
You are correct. A moth goes into a podiatrist's office, mm-hmm. And the podiatrist's office says, what's the problem? And the moth says, what's the problem? Where do I begin, man? He goes, I go to work for Gregory Olenevich, and all day long I work. Honestly, Doc, I don't even know what I'm doing anymore. I don't even know if Gregory Olenevich knows. He only knows that he has power over me, and that seems to bring him happiness. But I don't know. I wake up in a malaise and I walk here and there. The podiatrist says, "Oh, yeah?" And the moth goes, "Yes." And he goes, "At night, I sometimes wake up and I turn to some old lady in my bed that's on my arm. A lady that I once loved, Doc. I don't know where to turn to. My youngest, Alexandria. She fell in the cold of last year. The cold took her down as it did many of us. And my other boy. And this is the hardest pill to swallow, Doc. My other boy, Gregorio Ivanilidovich. I no longer love him. As much as it pains me to say, when I look in his eyes, all I see is the same cowardice that I catch when I take a glimpse of my own face in the mirror. If only the cowardice was stronger, then perhaps I could bring myself to reach over to that cocked and loaded gun that lays on the bedside behind me. And in this hellish facade once
How long
for
a drive was this? Do you live in the valley? Where do you live? Please, sorry.
He says, "Doc, sometimes I feel like a spider, even though I'm a moth, just barely hanging on to my web with an everlasting fire underneath me. I'm not feeling good." And so the doctor says, "Moth, man, you're troubled. But you should be seeing a psychiatrist. Why on earth did you come here?" And then the moth said, "Because the light was on."
Oh, it's so brilliant.
It's one of the greatest jokes I think I've ever heard.
Yeah,
it's sort of like the Aristocrats, where I feel like he's, yeah. I mean, the skill in the comedian is how much he could stretch that out.
Right, but it's like, rather than stretching it out with like, here's a bunch of disgusting things, or here's some actual jokes, it's all just non-jokes. And
yeah.
He is amazing delivery. At non-jokes.
Yeah. I had this weird moment. It didn't last very long because I realized that I just do this of my own free will, but I had this moment where I'm like, why do I even go on the podcast? It's like, why do I even try making people laugh? Why do I even bother? I'll never be as good as the moth joke.
End this hellish facade.
I need to end this hellish facade. Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
My other favorite video of this week that I feel like didn't get enough play is this this backyard argument that someone recorded on Memorial Day.
Oh, yeah. I've seen this. It's great.
Don't say I'm peeing messages. I'm the vagina. I don't have a vagina. But you do. I have a penis!
The dog ran away.
You have a vagina! You can do it, Jesse. I'll pick you.
It's like the birds are chirping, and there's just some guy screaming about, I don't have a vagina!
See, I would totally join in that. Like, I would just be like, that's not what I heard. Like, yeah. And just try to keep stirring the pot.
Yeah.
I never met my grandfather on my mom's side.
Gregor
Inolididovich. But my favorite story about him is that he would sit out in the backyard and smoke cigarettes and drink old fashions. Uh-huh. And there was a kid next door named Johnny.
He would drink hand jobs?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. That's what we call an old fashioned.
Right. His name is Johnny, and the mom would step outside and go, "Johnny, dinner!" And he'd be like, "Shut up, you old hag!" And he'd be like, "Johnny, you're going to be in so much trouble when you get home!" And yeah, that's my favorite story about him.
Just a thing that they would do.
Yeah, he thought it was hilarious.
I think it's hilarious.
Yeah.
Do you think Do you think that he gave you your love of farts?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Because I'll make a joke or I'll do something or say something, and then either my mom or one of my family members, like my aunt or uncle, would be like, "Yep, that's your grandfather right there."
I see that. I see his farts. I see that same love of farts in him and you, boy.
That smelled just like one of his farts.
If only his farts were stronger, then I could have the courage to. God damn it! That joke is so good.
Yeah, it's really brilliant.
You guys ever see him do the roast of Bob Saget?
Oh, yeah, it's brilliant.
I almost pulled that clip and then I didn't at the last minute.
Oh,
on account of he's old.
Yeah. Susie Essman's here. Susie Essman's a vegetarian, but I got to tell you, I think she's full of baloney.
I see you have
he's
a lot
got the
of
cue cards.
Well wishers here. In that they'd like to see you in one. A well. They want to murder you in a well.
And then he kind of awkwardly flips to the next cue card.
Yeah.
He uses the cue card to great comic effect in that roast. Yeah. Or the index card, I mean.
And apparently he did an interview with Marc Maron, and apparently he bombed the whole way through. I mean, the laughs that you're hearing are there, but they must have had to turn them up significantly because apparently everyone looked at him like he was insane.
Yeah.
Well, he kind of is.
Yeah.
I mean, but insane in the best way. That's the thing. It's like, you know that Norm is definitely not like a normal person who has a normal family life.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
No, he's a terrible gambling addict.
Speaking of weird comedians,
he doesn't touch any substances, right? But he just gambles like crazy, isn't that?
Yeah,
right?
He doesn't touch substances.
I feel like he doesn't drink at all.
He always struck me as a drinker.
I mean, I don't know if he drinks heavily or not. If he drinks, I don't think it's an issue. Yeah, but gambling is his big issue. Apparently, he has lost all of his money 3 times. That's insane.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is about like crazy old comedians, but speaking of them, Gilbert Gottfried had a big cameo in A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Oh, nice.
And that guy fucking kills me like every time. Like the screen, I know the screaming shtick like bugs some people, but goddamn, like it was weird because the theater was like mostly silent, but I was just dying the whole time.
He's so funny.
I agree.
He's another one who's like, he tells a lot of jokes.
Yeah.
They're fucking great.
Yeah, he used to do this thing at Howard Stern where he was like, he would do 2 things. He would do like Dracula, and then he would do Dice Clay. He would like do a fake Dice Clay.
Yeah.
Oh man, he did a lot of Jew jokes. So did you either guys watch the Donald Sterling Master Shake mashup?
No,
I didn't watch that either. So.
The one that V. Stiviana recorded?
Yeah, a couple people emailed us. First email, Frot Bros, I just wanted to say that as a black lady, I'm totally on board with Vince's love/admiration of plantations. Say what you will about their ideologies. Their mansions were beautiful, and to this day, pillars on a home equal prestige. Also, previous slave ownership, but mostly prestige, and I can't wait to get some. Love all the Frot guests, but I hope Matt Lieb doesn't feel replaced. He gets very sensitive.
That's true. I am very sensitive.
It's true. That's your thing.
Yeah.
If the tip of my dick was a person.
Yeah, that person would be me.
Look who showed up.
Sorry. Yeah, what? It's Master Shake. I've got this. A couple people sent us this. I haven't watched it yet. Maybe it's bad. I don't know.
Let's do it.
Only one way to find out.
Yeah.
I thought you said you didn't do birthdays.
I guess being 51 years older than her, I was deluding myself.
I support them and give them food and clothes and cars and houses.
Jake, we rent the house. We don't own it.
Who gives it to them? Does someone else give it to them?
I don't. Oh, God, I don't.
Good thing this wasn't blood. I'd be licking AIDS right now.
He's got AIDS. He made love to every girl in every city in America, and he had AIDS.
I think he has HIV. He doesn't actually have full-blown AIDS.
Jews, when they get successful, they will help their people. And some of the African-Americans, maybe I'll get in trouble again.
I don't know how many times I'm going to tell you no about that, okay?
No.
They don't want to help anybody.
Listen to this mouth. Carved them out.
Tonight, you will get your dick ripped off.
You told me you were going to remove it.
RoboSitter, what is your prime directive?
To ensure the safety and comfort of Meatwad.
I'm trying to have sex with her. I'm trying to play with her.
Meatwad, you got a big dick, right?
Oh, yeah, huge.
You may say you have the biggest penis in the world. I would have said I could fly over over high-rise buildings if I had to.
I'm just not too clear on being so old and black. Why am I black? And where did I get this suit? It's ridiculous.
Hispanics feel certain things towards blacks. Blacks feel certain things towards other groups. It's been that way historically.
People, let's go.
Where's Amber? I can't turn my head.
I guess that you don't know that. Maybe you're stupid.
Me what?
I mean, maybe the visual helped, but it's pretty good.
Oh, no, it turns out I've seen that, too. You know, I've spent 90% of my time in Los Angeles just in my room watching videos on the internet. This is the worst city in the world.
You got to get out there, buddy.
I know. I was thinking of getting out. So it's like I'll go out and it's to do a show, and then, you know, and then I'll spend the rest of the night hanging out. Not watching internet videos, but during the day I have to take care of this little fucking baby. All right.
You can't take him to a bar with you?
No, I can't take him to a bar. He's a baby. He's not old enough to drink. And I'm an alcoholic addict.
The one thing that seems like it suck about LA is you can't just walk places. You know, you gotta like know where you're going and drive there and
get on the freeway for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been a lot of
traffic at 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah, there's always traffic, and I'm just the one cool thing is what I like about driving is I like singing in the car.
Oh, I love singing in the car.
Yeah, so I've been singing a lot. Yeah, a lot of Third Eye Blind.
I knew he was gonna put that in the movie as soon as we caught him filming.
Put what in the what now?
The Third Eye Blind scene in Whoop Dreams.
Oh yeah.
When we were singing in the RV.
Yeah, Whoop Dreams now available on Hulu.com.
Yeah, I've heard a couple people told me that people that we don't even know or know about the Frotcast, that they've overheard them talking about it at work.
Wow, no fucking way.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. Yup. I had a comedian friend, you know Anna Saracina? Do you know Vince? Do you know Anna?
Sounds familiar. I probably do.
Well, she's down in LA now, and she came up to me to congratulate me on the movie. Or she said the video. And I was like, oh, thanks. And then she said she thought it was really good. Her and her boyfriend watched it and laughed. And I was like, I was really proud of it, you know, the way it got. You know, I thought she was talking about the LeBron video. So I spent a little while talking about the LeBron video, and then she goes, yeah, no, I was talking about Whoop Dreams. And then I sounded like a fucking idiot, and I had to be like, oh, yeah, that's good, too. Both of those are good. But you should see the LeBron video.
Yeah. When people are like, oh, congratulations on Whoop Dreams, I'm like, cool. I mean, I was there. I can't really take credit for it much beyond that.
Yeah, if you actually add up the amount of things that we said and how much we're actually in it. We're not actually in it that much.
Which is better. And I watched it and I was like, you know, we should be in this less.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought we were in it a perfect amount, actually. I was happy with how much we were in it. Cause, it wasn't just about us, you know, talking about it. We actually showed people. It was cool. It's a good video.
Yeah. It's a cool video. I do think it would be better if we went back this year or went back for some interviews. I just really want to see that scene that's like the wrestler where the wrestler's at the deli counter and he's like, you know, he's this pro wrestler, but he's got a day job. Right. I want to see the insane clown at his day job. I want to see the guy, you know, goes from his fam to his like shitty job somewhere.
Yeah, and he just lives, you know, the rest of the year working behind the deli counter, just waiting for next year's gathering.
Everybody's working for the gathering.
And then also, I want to see. I really want to see Skylar doing biochemistry. I want to see her in a lab coat with a beaker, you know, just pouring. Just
a bubbling graduated cylinder of blue liquid.
Just a bunch of test tubes, just probably making one of those like volcanoes for the science fair.
the science fair volcano.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it would still be hot. You know, because be like, hey, we saw her eat someone's asshole.
She was an aggressive asshole eater.
Yeah, well, you know what she was? She was a winner.
That's right.
She wanted to win that contest, and by gum, did she do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I loved her.
You know, she's proof that when you set your mind to something, can't no one stop you.
Yeah, that's the power of love. I don't know.
Don't eat money.
Don't eat butt.
Don't need no consensuals.
Don't need no dental dam to ride this train.
Wonder what she's doing.
Oh, I mean, you think she's coming back this year?
I mean, she's part of the Wolfpack team of women.
What would it take to get you back? Yeah, she's a Wolfpack girl, I think.
It would take, I think, some money.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think if all expenses paid plus money, I would totally go back.
Yeah. I'm curious. I wonder if people would be mad at us. Would they recognize us? Would they know? I mean, there's got to be some people that, because the Juggalo world is pretty plugged in. When someone does stuff about Juggalos, they seem to know about it real fast.
Yeah, I think we'd probably get half and half. I bet 50% of the people, and this is of the people who know anything about the movie, half of them would probably be kind of pissed about it. Because they seem to be generally pissed. Because we talked to one of them about American Juggalo, the 20-minute Vimeo video. And they were pissed about that. And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, that was super complimentary, and it seemed like a nice short, you know?
Yeah.
So if they hated that, then they for sure would hate Whoop Dreams.
I want to know where that girl with the clowns painted on her boobs from American Juggalo was the year we went, because...
Oh, yeah.
She was pretty good looking!
Yeah, she was. There was a lot of beautiful women.
You couldn't, you couldn't get those magnums wet.
No, I couldn't. Those magnums just lay in my backpack to this day. I know. I feel bad about it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's been a pretty good Frogcast today, you guys. What do you think?
I'd say so.
Yeah, best one yet.
Talked about the sacrament, June 6th, with Ty West.
See it.
We probably could have talked for like another 45 minutes just about MMA, but I don't know.
He had to go jits.
Well, yeah, he had to go jits.
He's a busy man. Making movies and jitsing.
Is he an MMA guy?
Matt saw the movie. Yeah, he is.
I did see the movie. I thought the one scene where the sister killed the brother. Oh, damn it. I just did a spoiler. Shit. Oh, fuck.
I'm going to have to bleep that out. Hold on, let me figure out where that is.
Okay.
Okay. All right. I'll figure out where that is.
Well, I thought it was, I thought that there was one part that was really, really good. And that's what I'll say.
Yeah.
Put that on the poster.
I thought the guy who played the Jim Jones character was really good.
Oh, yeah. He was excellent.
What else has he been in? He looks familiar.
Nothing. Like, I was
really?
We didn't get to it. I was going to ask Ty where he found that guy, and he hasn't really. Let me see.
Oh, for sure. I know him from something.
He looks so familiar, though.
Let me look him up again. I was looking through his IMDb, and I didn't really see a ton of stuff that I recognized. He has been in. His name's Gene Jones.
No.
That's his name. He was in No Country for Old Men.
Oh, that's right.
He worked at the gas station.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
That's what I know him from.
And he hasn't been in anything before 2004.
Oh yeah.
He was in Whiskey and Ditch as Hank.
He was in an episode of Chappelle's Show as Prosecutor Number 3.
Dude, I was supposed to read the IMDb.
Oh yeah. Well, guess what? I got a computer too now, motherfucker.
Oh, I had so much power over you before.
Oh, and he was in House of Cards. Yep.
Yeah.
He played Wayne Paley. I don't remember that character, but yeah.
I don't remember.
Oh, and he was in Boardwalk Empire. Yeah, I've seen him a bunch of times.
Yeah, who did he play in Boardwalk Empire? That's probably where I recognize him from the most.
I don't know. He played a character named Indiana Counterman. So you probably it sounds like close to being an extra, but he probably had some lines.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely know him from No Country for Old Men because he was at the gas station and they flipped the coin and shit.
Yeah,
that was a fucking awesome scene. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was great. Yeah, he was amazing. Uh-huh. He should be in more things.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Oh, and I also know him from Louie. He was he played the pharmacist in Louie. Did you guys see the scene where
where he has to go get the vag cream for the woman?
Exactly. And he's explaining to her how to apply it to her vagina or kind of explaining like what the problem was. Yeah, I remember that scene vividly. Except for what actually happens in the scene. I don't remember that.
But everything else.
Everything else I remember. What he looked like. What she looked like. What Louie looked like.
Do you have any shows? You have any shows coming up down there?
Yeah. This Thursday, I'm going to be at the Virgil at 7:30 for a show called Big Money. And then right after that, also this Thursday in L.A. at the Comedy Palace, which is at a Chinese restaurant called like the China Palace or something. That's a 9 o'clock show.
Something Chinese.
So yeah, something Chinese, you know.
Well, I'm going to be on the Schmoes No movie show tomorrow in L.A.
What's the Schmoes No movie show?
They have a show about schmoes that know movies.
Is this a comedy show?
No, it's like a web show. It's pretty,
sweet.
Pretty famous, actually, or pretty decently popular.
That's right.
Yeah, I did a comedy show with one of the guys like 2 years ago. But anyway, so that should be fun. And I don't know. I'm going to be in San Diego this weekend. If anybody wants to say what's up, I'll be around, I guess. Anyway, next week, I don't know who we got on. Someone pretty cool, probably.
We'll figure it out.
Oh, I'm getting I'm hopefully getting PFT Commenter to read an excerpt of his ebook.
Whoa.
So that should be pretty
cool.
That
would be my favorite thing ever.
Yeah.
I'd be very happy.
And hold on. Last thing I want to say is I want to give a shout out to the first show I did when I came to LA was actually in Covina. And I did a show and all of a sudden, as soon as I stepped in the place, two guys from Germany who were Frotcast fans showed up. And I took a picture of one of them. His name was Marcus
Gregoro.
Oh, so we did get a voicemail. You just reminded me. Sorry.
Frotters, what's up? Happy Memorial Day weekend. Just had a you guys left us with a bit of a cliffhanger, so I got a two-part question. The wedding that Brendan went to with the French street dancing Doctors Without Borders superhero nemesis guy. Was Return of the Mac played at that wedding? Was the streak continued? And follow-up question, part B, will that song be in heavy rotation during Brendan's own wedding? These questions need to be answered, gentlemen. Hook us up. All right. Have a good one. Later.
No. So, in fact, it was a band. It was a really shitty band. At one point, they played Smooth. By Santana featuring Rob Thomas.
One of my favorite tweets was Bobby Big Wheel was like, in Tom Cruise's version of Groundhog Day, he wakes up every morning to Smooth by Rob Thomas and Santana.
Yep. Yeah. So the band was awful. There was no opportunity to get Return of the Mac. They didn't know it. I asked. But I will say, I don't know if I ever shared this with the Frot, on the Frotcast, but my
Breaking
streak
news.
Got broken at 13. At Brett's wedding.
Oh,
what got broken?
My streak of 13 straight weddings getting Return of the Mac played.
Oh.
And Brett had a DJ, and the DJ just shirked his duties.
The new schedule.
And did not play Return of the Mac, even though I asked twice, and he assured me twice that they would play it.
That's just wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my jam right here.
Oh, come on, yeah.
So is it going to be on heavy rotation at your wedding?
Yeah, because we're going to have a band, but there's also going to be interludes where we're playing off, you know, like MP3s or whatever.
Okay.
So definitely fitting that in.
Are you going to bust out like a guitar and just maybe rock out on it yourself?
Maybe. You never know. Maybe we'll bring Mark Morrison up on stage. He's invited to my wedding.
I think you play this bass line on the guitar, right?
Yeah.
Oh, they also have a keyboard in there, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, Brendan, let's take us out here to the sweet song.
Yeah.
Sweet sounds.
All right. We should do this every week.
I know.
I'm feeling this. Well, thanks for listening again this week. It means a lot to us. It means a lot to me.
Yeah.
I mean that. I really do, do, do. you can email us at frogcast@gmail.com. Vince, what's the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030. And, you know, keep writing those reviews on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, whatever, man. Every little bit. Tell your friends, all that shit.
Then I'm back to run the show. All right. Well, thanks for listening once again. And until next week, good night and good chins.